afraid that it's hard to get lost in it sometimes. Okay. This is a Gemara. It's discussing the pasuk that we say about at night, Krishma Lamita. That's the pasuk that we say at night, Krishma Lamita. Say, Rigzu v'al techto, imu bilvavchem al mishkavchem v'doim yuselam. It means, get angry and don't sin. Commune with your hearts on your beds and be quiet.
Even get angry, not tremble?
Rigzu. Well, we'll see. Rigzu, that's what the word rogue is, literally means anger. But you're right, people translate usually as tremble, but rigzu literally means get angry. And that's how the Gemara is going to darshan it, as we go through today. So, that's the source, by the way. This pasuk is the source of Kriya Shema Lamita. And the Gemara says earlier that even though a person said Kriya Shema in Shul, he fulfilled the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, there's still a mitzvah to say Kriya Shema a third time before he goes to sleep. Right? He's learning that from this pasuk, Imru v'al techdo, Imru bilvavka mashkavkem. They say that Amishchavkem on your bed, that's talking about, as it says in Kriya Shema, Bishach b'chavkev. And Iru Bilvavchem, commune with your hearts, that's a pasuk in Shema as well. So it's talking about Shema there. Yeah, and you should say Shema, Iru Bilvavchem, are things that you say with your hearts. These words should be on your heart, it says about Shema. So it says you should take the words that it says in the Chumash, they should have them on your heart, you should say them on your bed when you're going to sleep, and then be quiet and sleep afterwards. So that's the source for the halacha of saying Kriya Shema Lamita. Now, the Gemara writes, so I'll just spend a minute on this Gemara since it's Nogea Lamaisa, it's always important to do the Gemara that I know. Kriya Shema Lamita is something completely different from the mitzvah of Kriya Shema itself. And the Gemara says that if your Talmud Chacham is potter from saying Kriya Shema Lamita, so the Gemara says over here, and Talmud Chacham who ain't sorry. Now, you don't have to. Now, the simple explanation why a person says Kriya Shema Lamita is that you're really asking for protection. You're going to sleep. And you know, when a person is going to sleep, you're actually in a state of danger. You're unprotected. You can't protect yourself. So, who protects you while you're asleep? The answer is Hashem protects you. And therefore, yeah, it's mevatel mezigen, it's mevatel damaging forces of the night. Before you go to sleep, you say Shema Yisrael, showing a deep trust in Hashem. And it's mevatel, mezigen, it's mevatel also, hirurim roim, we'll see also, bad thoughts. So the word Rashi is very interesting. Rashi says, Talmud Chacham hu. Rashi says, what's the definition of Talmud Chacham? That he goes over his learning before he goes to sleep. So he says, the Torah will protect him. And the definition, people talk about this Rashi, it's sort of a famous Rashi. What's the definition of Talmud Chacham? He's Ragil v'mishnasa lachzorak yirsas v'tamim. What is a Talmud Chacham? Before he goes to sleep, he goes over what he learned that day while he's falling asleep on his bed. That's the Talmud Chacham, it says. The Gemara says, in Cain, he doesn't have to say Shema because the Torah protects him. He doesn't have to give himself over to Hashem. So, that's what Halacha, but anyway, that's interesting. Musa, for you see, the Talmud Chacham is somebody who's always going over and reviewing what he's learned. And the power of the Torah protects him. Abaye says, even the Talmud Chacham has to say one pasuk at least. It says, "Biyodko af kibruchi, in your hand I place my soul. Padisa osi, redeem me, Hashem Elohim." Now the Gemara says that even if you're Talmud Chacham, you should still say one pasuk. It says, "In your hand I place my soul." And it says, even though you don't need it for protection, because the Torah that a person has protects him. And if the problem is hirhurim, that you're worried before you go to sleep, that you'll have dreams, you're worried that you'll think about things that are proper, you know, it's night time, it's sleep. So if that's what you're worried about, so the Torah is the greatest protection for a person. So the Talmud Chacham doesn't really need protection from external problems and forces. The Talmud Chacham doesn't really need protection for him, Hirhurim, for thoughts and bad dreams, worries and things, because the Torah protects him both externally and from within, improving. So the Gemara says, nevertheless, he should still say at least Shema. Why? Because there's another Indian of going to sleep before you go to sleep at night. It's that you're supposed to willingly take your soul and place it in the hands of Hashem. Yodcho afki ruchi Hashem, I'm placing my soul in your hands. Redeem me, Kael Emes, God of truth. It's a beautiful pasuk. And before Hashem say that before you go to sleep at night, you're actually supposed to take your soul and give it over to Hashem. It's like a type of, you know, it's a type of death, you know, where when a person dies, you say Shema before you die. So the purpose of saying Shema before you die, the Gemara Bracha says about Rabbi Akiva before he died. He said, Echad, and he died with Echad on his lips. So Maharal writes there that when he said Echad, he said he meditated on the word Echad until his soul left him. So they say that he wasn't just saying, you know, the simple shot we say Shema before a person dies is to say that, you know, this too I have emunah is for Tov. You know, everything is from Hashem, even this. But the Maharal says a deeper shot that when you say Shema before a person dies, yeah, the concept is that you're saying when you die, your death should be a choice. That not that your soul is being taken away from you, but I willingly give up my soul back to Hashem. I'm giving it back to you. Hashem Echad, I'm giving my soul back to you. And over here as well, when a person goes to sleep, you should say, Hashem, you know, I'm giving my soul over to you. You'll take it. Chazal say that through sleep you'll refresh me and give it back to me new again. So I have a kavana that I'm giving it back. And the Mefarshim write, somebody who says Kriyat Shema L'Amita, Rizal and others, and he says it with kavana, yeah, and you give, it's very hard to say Kriyat Shema L'Amita with kavana. I know I'm usually so tired by the time I go to sleep, you know. So if I need to have a kavana, you know, it's very rare that I'm up for more than 2 seconds before I go to sleep. So, but if you can say it with kavana, they say that a person in Zohar, the Arizal used to say to Elias Neshama at night. It's a big difference. You know, your soul, so the Gaon writes that sleep was created. So not just to, you know, it's just not just a negative thing, but there's a positive concept of sleep. That when you're asleep, you know, it's a healing process. You know what sleep is? I don't know if I ever get into it. If you ever studied sleep, sleep is a very interesting thing. Sleep is a state, I don't know if you think about it, what is sleep? You know, you go to sleep and all of a sudden you fall into a different state of consciousness. But sleep is a state of being whereby the body heals itself. When a person is in a deep sleep, the body produces all sorts of hormones and all sorts of chemicals and things that refresh the body and take away all the impurities and do all sorts of things. If a person doesn't sleep, even if you just lay, you know, tranquilly, and the body doesn't replenish itself. It's a state of, it's a deep state of being when going, the person is, the whole being of the person is replenished. And besides that, Chazal saying that besides physically the person says, but it's also, the Gaon writes, it's a time that a person needs a little bit during the day whereby the soul leaves the body, you know, and is able to be, you know, leaves the physical body and is able to go back to its source, yeah, close to Hashem, and as a result, be nourished. So they can once again come back fresh the next day. This is, as I'll say, it's a tremendous difficulty for the soul to be in the body all day long. It's cut off from the source of Shemayim. It's cut off from all its power and its strength and its purity. So when a person goes to sleep, so your soul goes back up to Shemayim, having the lead on the Shemayim. And as a result of that, it regenerates its spirituality and its nourishment. And therefore, when you come back again, the body, you're able to feel going again, I'm fresh, let's work up, you know, you're supposed to feel like that. I don't know if you feel like that when they get up in the morning either. But that's what they write. Dreams also are a way of, you know, people say, of a type of healing process. And sometimes dreams are a type of nebuah, a type of emes. Dreams that can be truthful. Some dreams are, and if they're not truthful, they're often ways of healing. So they say, the question right, that before you go to sleep, yeah, you should be like a sacrifice. You should like give your soul back to Hashem. It's Hashem, I'm giving you back my soul. You know, you're gonna give it back in the morning. We say Moda Ani Lefanecha. We thank Him. Azavti b'nishmasi, you return me. But we give you. I'm giving you back my soul. And when you have that idea, when you go to sleep, that I'm so willingly giving my soul back to you. So Chazal say that as a result, the person will be zocha. that he should have, you know, that he's, we do it with kavana, it can be zohar that we have an aliyas. Shamay nines. Your soul is able to replenish itself sometimes. A person is able to have sorts of deep understandings for sleep, spiritual aliyah. They know that the aliyah on Shabbos is to take a nap. And when somebody saw his lips murmuring, you know, in his sleep, and then they went to Talmidim, they went to listen, you know, couldn't hear anything. He woke up to take a long nap Shabbos afternoon. It's one of the only things I have in common with the Arizal. So he still go to sleep. But he said, so again, the Arizal, they asked him, what were you speaking about? What did you see? So the Arizal said, you know, if I had 1,000 years, I couldn't repeat over to you, you know, what I experienced in my Shabbos afternoon sleep, you know, what he had to see. So you have no idea, you know. So that's what happened. So simply speaking, the Kriyas Shema Lamita is a way. It's a deep trust in Hashem. It's a way of showing bitachon in the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Hashem, I'm giving you my soul. You're protecting me, and I'm giving myself over to you, even though I'm powerless at night, subject to the forces of the night and what's going to happen. Nevertheless, I'm in your hands, Hashem, and I'm trusting in you because of that, you know. Go to sleep. So it's a deep level of bitachon. I'm placing myself in your hands, which is what bitachon is all about. Hashem, you're running the world, and I'm relying on you, and I trust in you, and I'm tranquil, and you're taking care of me. You make that statement, so it's an avoda of bitachon. I'm in your hands, Hashem, and I trust in you, and I'm giving over to you, and we without problem. So that's the simple shot. And the deeper shot is, it's to keep from the zikin. If you learn Torah, which is a good idea, by the way, to try to go over some Torah that you learn before you fall asleep. So that's good. So you don't really need to be protected for that. But nevertheless, in order to make sleep into a spiritual uplifting experience where the neshama is cleansed properly, so then you have kavana that you're giving yourself back to Hashem, you know, like the yekiva. Here, Hashem, take my soul. You have that kavana, and as a result of that, I didn't really prepare to teach this Gemara today, so I didn't research it in depth. If I researched it in depth, you'd really get into the Amkus of Kriyas Shema Lamita, because you have to go into the Psuki. You know, this is a beautiful puzzle. V'yodcho afki ruchi, and you have Pedisos, in your hand, I placed my soul. Redeemi, Hashem, God of truth. You know, it's very. So if we were learning the Gemara properly, you know, and I had time to prepare, I would have gotten through all the Mefarshim because of the hill and looked up all the Mefarshim and what it means. We, you know, redeem me. What's the pshat? You're asking for Hashem should redeem me. What's the pshat? Redeem me. You know.
No.
Yeah. You know, God of truth. You can rely on him. So, but I didn't have a chance to look through all the things about. I really thought I was going to teach the next one, but nevertheless. You get an inkling over here of what Kriyas Shema Lamita is all about, and the depth of it. And if anybody on their own wants to work on Kriyas Shema Lamita, so you can look at this Gemara on top of Brachas Daf Hey Amud Aleph, and look through the Mefarshim and Tehillim. I'm trying to give you a derech on how to read a Gadata. The first rule in learning a Gadata is that the Pesukim that are brought down, you look up and go through with all the Mefarshim. That is the first rule. In terms of learning a Gadara properly. People learn a Gadara and they skip over the Psukim, you know, to try to see the story, what they're doing. The Gadara is the exact opposite. A Gadara is a perish of the Psukim. And all the depth of the Gadara comes from the Psukim that brings down itself. So that's the way, that's the derech that you start out when you read a Gemara, I guess. You bring out the, you know, you read a Bikiyas, and nobody reads them properly, nobody even understands the Psukim half the time, so they don't look them up, and they just go by. But to really try to get the afkus of it, you have to go through the Psukim with all the Mefarshim and try to see what they're talking about. And then once you see all the Mefarshim, then you go back to the Gemara and see how the Gemara is learning it, and see how they're saying their own pshat, and then you look at the Mefarshim, and then you begins to move, you know, cool. Then you look up the other things that they say in Kriyas Shema Lamita also. Anyway, so that's the source, everybody asks you. Kriyas Shema Lamita, Rig Zuvi Al Techto, that pasuk that we say is the source of it as well, that's what we say at night.
There's absolutely nothing in there about getting good night's sleep, right? Nothing at all about getting good night's sleep in Kriyas Shema Lamita.
Right. Nothing like goodness. Like it's all, most of the Parshat Pesach, as I told you, it's about Nezikin and It's for protection. You know, there's nothing really later on about it. Anybody says Krishna Mitala 9 destroys, you know. It's as if he holds double-edged sword. There's another Gemara after this Gemara that goes into it more in depth. Also, there are a few Gemaras about Krishna. What I want to do with you today, this next Gemara, that's also darshaning this pasuk. Amrei Levi bar Chamo, Amrei Shimon ben Lakish. And the Gemara, what they do when they set up a Gadadas, what the Gemara does is that they bring down a pasuk and they talk about it. And then often what the Gemara will do is that they'll bring down another person. Yeah, this one is from Rish Lakish. The first Gemara was from Rishu ben Levi, who also was talking about the same pasuk, and he'll give a completely different drasha. The truth is that even though it seems on the surface as if they're just organizing the Gemara according to subject matter, and they threw together all the drushas on this Gemara, on this pasuk, the truth is that there's a thematic connection. And it's one is usually a much deeper explanation of the other. That's how you learn a Gadadas as well. It's explaining one after the other in a deeper and deeper way. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Levi bar Chamo, Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish. That's the Gemara. Le'olam yargiz odom yetze tov yetze hara. So the Gemara, let a person always, le'olam, continually, yargiz, anger his yetze tov against his yetze hara. Shneimar, as it's written, Rigzu v'yal techto. Get angry, don't sin. This Gemara, Rabbi Shlakish learned this Gemara to tell us, yeah, the weapons that a person has in his battle against the Yetzer around this world. He's going to learn that there are four weapons, you know, that we have in our arsenal to fight the Yetzer around. And what the first part is, he says there are sort of three steps to this process. First step is that a person has to realize that he has a Yetzer hara. Right? That's step number one. Like the Gemara in Kedushin writes, in Pogbacha Menuvel there, if you happen to meet the Yetzer hara, what should you do with him? You drag him into the face. I'm going to see that in a minute. But the first step is, it says, if you happen to meet him, what's the pshat if you happen to meet him? Step number one is that people don't often realize that they have a Yetzer hara. Gemara writes later on another place that there are seven different names for the Yetzer hara. So Kadosh Baruch Hu calls him Ra. The next name for him is Tzafoni. Tzafoni means the hidden one, you know. I think the last name is our friend. In other words, Hashem, he knows the definition. He knows it's Ra. But the lower we go, the less we're able to understand that we have a Yetzer hara. Often people go through life for many years and they don't realize that they have forces within them that are very, very dangerous and have to be controlled and used properly. And it's a major task in life to be able to learn how to use them properly. I don't know whether the Western world has grasped this point either, strangely enough. There's a Gemara in Sukkah. Tells the story. It's a famous Gemara about Abaye. That Abaye once saw a man and a woman, you know, walking together, and alone, and going through the woods. So Abaye sees them and says, "Oy vey, Yichud, you know, they're going to walk alone through the woods. They're going to do a veirut. What am I going to do? I have to stop them." So he followed them, you know, through the woods. I always say it's a nice scene there. You know, this whole man, you know. Whatever, how old he was, a sage, following his kids, you know, hiding behind the trees, you know, as they walk. So this young couple, you know, walk with each other, and they go through the woods, who knows how long, 20 minutes, an hour, until the same, until they get to a crossroads, and one turns to the other and says, "It's been a very pleasant, you know, trip, discussion." And they turn around, and they separate. Nothing happens. So Abaye comes back and he says to himself, like that, he says, "How could it be? Look, nothing happened to them. They didn't do anything. Nothing happened. Because if I was in that situation, you know, who knows whether, you know, nothing would have happened. And look, here, these young kids, is that one?" So he got depressed. Yeah, he started leaning against the doorpost of his house. He got so depressed, couldn't go in. How could it be? Till Elion Novi was sent by Hashem to comfort him and say, "Don't worry, Abaye. Anybody who's greater than his friend, his Yetzer hara is bigger as well." It's Sukkah. Now, the Gemara is a controversial Gemara. I mean, it can't be that, you know, the greater a person is in Torah, the worse the Yetzer Hara is. It just doesn't make sense. You know, it can't be that somebody who learns Torah for 20 years is going to be worse than a 15-year-old. You know, obviously there's spiritual development. So Feldman, as I told you when I was learning with him, he once said Pshat on this Gemara, the following way, when I learned it with him. So Pshat is like this, that Abaya, this couple, when they're walking, both of them are completely unaware. They have no self-knowledge at all. They're walking and they say, what's the problem? Nothing's going to happen. Yichud, these rabbis making, you know, worrying about things. You know, what's going to happen? Nothing's going to happen. What's the problem? We'll go for a walk. What's the problem? So they walk, you know, and in the end, just nothing happens. But Abaya, who is a lot older than them and much greater than them, Kol HaGadol MeChaveru, he has, as a result, a much deeper awareness of the forces that go on inside a human being. And he knows, you know, something that they don't know. He knows that, you know, nothing happens. But he knows at the same time, you know, that if they had stopped and, you know, had the wind blown her hair, you know, in a certain angle, you know, they both would have been finished, you know, had something come to arouse them, the forces within them at that time, who's to say that nothing would have happened? You know, they both would have been completely out of control. Only nothing happened this time, you know. But Abaya, he's Kol HaGadol MeChaveru, has a greater awareness of the difficulties in life, you know. Yitzhar Gadol MeChaveru. He has a reality. He recognizes how difficult it is to deal with time in this world, and how careful and how powerful a force is. What's going to happen? You know? Yeah, it's the famous last words. I never thought anything would happen. Anything would happen. You know, it's the beginning of every, you know, affair. You know, yeah. Once when I was many years ago, a pretty long time ago, I was in some of my relatives' house. And it was like a family gathering. You know, none of the family wasn't religious. So I had this relative, some sort of distant cousin. You know, I used to call her like a bear to myself. You know, like Isha's Potiphar. I call her a bear. And she used to come over. She used to love to give hug people. You know, so you'd walk into the room and you'd say, hello, how are you? You know, and she'd start just standing with these open arms, you know. So while I was there, she came in, you know, I sort of put up my hands and waved at her. How you doing? You know. You know, she got the message. She sort of backed off a little bit. But she didn't really care because it was friendly. It was funny, you know. But there was one relative there who got very upset, this guy. And he was a, you know, he had heard that from people who shake hands and greet people. So he started yelling in front of everyone. What's the matter with you? He goes, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? You know? And then he started going around and hugging all these women in the room and giving them a kiss. Look, you think something's going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? What is
wow.
That's yelling at me.
That's
know?
Great.
Yeah. So, you know, everybody's looking at me, you know, what do you do in such a situation? You know, you try to crawl out the door, you know, what do you do? So I said to him, I'm sorry, I don't know, you know, why you're not worried. I'm worried, maybe something will happen. I find it so strange, you know. You know, who says nothing's going to happen, you know. These women go, something happened. I said, things happen all the time. I said, what do you mean nothing's going to happen? So things happen all the time. Which, you know, I got a good laugh out of everybody, you know, sort of dissipating. You know, nothing's more funny than a rabbi saying, maybe something will happen. But, you know, everybody got a kick out of it. But the truth is, I was going to say, you know, I had what to say to this guy. Because this person who was saying, what's going to happen? He had a pretty bad track record, you know. I knew all the skeletons in his closet, you know, this relative. And don't ask, you know, what his private life and the various, you know, relationships that he's had, you know, and he's there, he's the one doctor saying, what do you think's going to happen? What do you think's going to happen? You know, and the adultery rate in America hovers around, I don't know, what, 60% or something like that, you know, and all these things, who knows what it is, I didn't even go, and this guy's shouting, what are you worried about? What's going to happen?
Everything.
You know what I mean? He's shouting like I'm some sort of fool, you know, and this guy, you know, what are you talking about? He's living in, you know, and the truth is that the whole, you know, whole concept of the modern world, that such a thing as the Yetzer Hara, destructive, if it's not used properly, the whole concept has fallen out. People think that things are natural, and that since they're natural, there's no problem, and everything is good. And meanwhile, they live in a world that the whole world is out of control, and there's so many problems of abuse, and so many problems of, don't ask, you know, the whole, the modern world has no concept at all about how to use the instinctual drives of the person properly. People are out of control for fame, and out of control to rise to the top, and out of control in taiva. All of the drives of the Yetzer Hara, mamish, dancing wildly, says the Gemara, and nobody even begins to try to control them and use them properly. It's just considered that people are willing to just, it's natural. And as a result, there's no even concept that you have to fight a war with the Yetzer Hara. And if you tell people you have to fight a war with the Yetzer Hara, they look at you like you're some sort of repressed person, and it's like going, these are forces that you need to fight all of your kohos against to overcome your desire to be famous, you know, so it doesn't schlep you who knows where, you know. How much work it takes to work on your ego so that in the end, you know, you won't sabotage somebody to get to the top and become rich, you know. How many people mamish kill in order to get to the top? What goes on in the world out there, you know? And you can go and see what it's like in the business world and what people do to get to the top and how people do it and what people do to get rich and rise. If I was a cutthroat world, going if I ever work in New York for a year, go and see what how people act and how they cut each other back and their ego. And to say to a person, it's a life's work, a war against the Yetzer Hara to be the greatest, I mean, how to use that drive for Tov and not, it's a life's work. And it's the same thing with taiva. Be able to use it properly and find the proper way. You have to fight a war against the Yetzer Hara as well. You have to enter into battle. Right? And it's Li'olam, the Gemara says. Li'olam. It's always continual. It's a battle that doesn't stop all of your whole life. It's a battle that's continual to be able to use properly your instinctual life. Use it through choice, for Tov, and not flip onto automatic, you know. And it's something that's Li'olam. It's a great battle of, you know, like the famous Chovos Levavos, when he meets a soldier coming back from the battlefront. So he said, now that you've been successful in the small war, so start the big war, you know. Start fighting the main battle. So he said, what main battle, you know? He's thinking, well, you know. The main battles against your Yetzer Hara, your inner battles in life. You think it's nothing. Now this guy's going back to get drunk, you know. Won the small battle. That's no victory. Go now and start the real battle. And don't go to the bar and get drunk and victory. Go. Become a tzaddik. Develop yourself spiritually. Take on your drives and uplift them and develop them and use them for Tov, you know. That's the big battle of a person. And that's continual. And we have to, when a person enters into the battle, that's already a sign that he's begun to develop spiritually. Start to work with yourself. Know yourself, you know. A girl came to me a couple of days ago. And she was talking to me. She was a person who came up. She was saying that, she was talking to me about some of her difficulty. She was saying how that she had, she was unhappy. She said one of the reasons she was unhappy was that she never could allow herself to, you know, she kept on, whenever she came and did something, learning, she automatically, she kept on saying that she felt that she was stupid. She continually, degraded herself. Like, I'm never going to do anything, I'm not going to buy, I'm not going to be successful, you know. So she had a problem with this. She's very unhappy. So I said to her, listen, I said, it's time, you know, not being a therapist, you know, so I'm not a therapist. She wants to deal with her personal problems in a deeper way. She can get professional. But I said to her like this, I said, I hear that you have all these voices that when you do something, they say you did nothing and they degrade it and it's no good. I said, but who says that you have to listen to these voices? Start battling against them. If you hear somebody say, you do something good, you did something good, you know that you did something of value. Then you hear an inner voice that says, it was really worth it, so somebody else would have done it much better. Who says that you have to listen to that? You shouldn't take that lying down. Fight back and say, you know, it's a Yetzer Ra speaking. You know? And who says I have to believe you? If the person says, you know, someone says to you, ah, that was worthless, somebody else would have done much better. So say back, what do you, yeah, but nobody else did it, did they? Oh, I did it, nobody else. So what are you telling me somebody else did it for? You know? Pick up the bat. It's a Yetzer Ra that's trying to keep you down, you know? It's really a Yetzer Ra of the ego, but fight the battle. You have to start inner battles. You know? What do you, all your life, you've been just taking these things as for granted and believing them. Fight them. These are destructive voices. Let's write down all the destructive voices that you have and build counterattacks for each one. Uh-huh. You know? Every time you hear the voice say this, I'll give you a whole text to say back. We'll start writing back attacks and counterattacks. You know? You know, but then this is true, you know. Who says you have to believe these voices? It's from the Yetzer Ra. People didn't know they had a Yetzer Ra. They thought, well, I thought that was me. It's not you. Yetzer Ra. So, the first step is to know that you have a Yetzer Ra. The second step is to start a war against it. The third step is to know that you have weapons that Hashem gave you already, yeah, to defeat this Yetzer Ra. Our body is a battle, but Hashem didn't leave us without weapons. We have a lot of weapons here to help us, you know. And the first weapon that we have against the Yetzer Ra is the Yetzer Tov. That's what the Gemara says. The Olam Yargis Adam Yetzer Tov Al Yetzer Ra. Let a person take his Yetzer Tov, and that's the greatest weapon that we have against the Yetzer Ra, the Yetzer Tov. You have to know that you have it, and you have to stir it up and develop the Tov. And that's the first way that we deal with Ra. How? By developing Tov. So you're right. Now, first of all, here we have another discussion. That there are many people in this world who don't know they have a Yetzer Ra. Yeah. But many people do know. You know, not so long ago, a guy called me who was really upset with himself. You know why? Because he hit his wife. It's a story. A guy called me up and he was very upset with himself because he got angry and he hit his wife. He became a wife beater. This is a guy who's learning the Torah, you know. He lost it. His wife really got on his nerves. He's under, happens to be under tremendous pressure, etc. You know, whatever. So we started talking about it. But it's not exactly, you know, what you want from yourself in life, you know. And it happens. It's not so, you know, it happens. There are men who don't have control over their anger. And people don't realize they have a problem. So he said to me, you know, I never really realized I had a problem with anger. And this guy I taught in yeshiva, you know, for a couple of years. It wasn't so apparent that he had a problem with anger. You see it. When you get married, and you're under more pressures, it came out. The mamash has a problem. And you know he has a problem. And then he comes, it's, you know, comes and recognizes I have a problem. You know, I have a big problem. Well, I have to work on it. And he realizes the Yetzer Ra. All right. So now he knows he has the Yetzer Ra. But now he has another problem. Because the guy is falling into a depression because of his recognition and realization that he has the Yetzer Ra. So what does he do now? How does he stop himself? Like, you know, what do I do now? Besides the fact is, you know, if he does it again, his wife is going to leave him, or, you know, who knows what. So, what does he do now? So the answer is that even it's not enough just to know you have a Yetzer Ra. The person has to know as well, as I say, that you have a Yetzer Tov. And that is a chiddush, that the person has a Yetzer Tov. Now, let me explain you some psychology here. Yeah. If you look, for example, at some psychologists, their theories, yeah, when they talk about, most of them don't have any problems with the fact that there's a Yetzer Ra. You know, that was all Freud's work to detail the Yetzer Ra of Taiva in a very brilliant way, you know. He was a great genius understanding Taiva and all of its permutations and manifestations, how unconsciously it drags the person off and flashes images to get a person to work. And his whole work, if anybody ever read his work, is basically detailing how the Yetzer Hara of Taiva gets hold of a person and influences everything that he does. That was his main contribution to psychology. And I'm not trying to give him a recommendation, you know what I mean? But I'm just saying, you know, many things that he said, the psychologists all reject as being foolish by now, you know. Many basic points in this theory have been rejected by psychologists themselves almost. But nevertheless, that was his main contribution. He was the first one who detailed the Yetzer Hara of Taiva in a scientific manner.
He's coming back.
But that was his main contribution to psychological theory, and he proved it with all of his tests. I don't know if he proved it, but that's what he did. However, if you look, yeah. So the Yetzer Hara, he's a neurotic, he believes in that. If you look, however, about what he talks about the soul of the human being, or let's say the conscience of the human being, you know, man's desire to do good. So then already he gets pretty weak, you know. What's the conscience of a human being? Why do people want to do good? So, you know, what's the conscience? Conscience of a human being is like an internalized father, you know. That if your father yells at you long enough, so you'll hear his voice, and every time, do good, you know what I mean? But there's no real reality to it. There's no real force inside of a human being pushing him to do good. It's not intrinsic, it's something learned. Something learned. And this is, I'm not going to go into psychology, but so many people say it's something learned. And if a person doesn't have a father, so then he won't have any desire to do good. He'd be a monster. There's nothing intrinsic about a person's desire to do good. It has to be a learned behavior. But the drives of the body are intrinsic. There's no human being who doesn't have time. Correct? However, desire to be good, a lot of people may not have a desire to be good because it's not basic to the person. Now this, by the way, is a departure, not even just from the Torah, but there's a departure from ancient philosophy as well. Even if you look at people like Socrates and Hegel and Kant and other things, many philosophers and people believed that there was some sort of intrinsic conscience and moral ethic that belonged inside a human being that was basic to the nature of human beings and humanity. However, the psychologists don't believe it, often many of them. And the Torah, when it says that there's a soul, it's saying a deep thing. It's not just saying the Yetzer Tov that, well, everybody wants to be a good guy, you know. It's saying that it's intrinsic to the person that there are basic drives for good inside a human being, very powerful spiritual drives for good inside a human being. And these drives, they have to be, they're the source of our spiritual development. I say, you know, it's as a person is telling Elohim, Hashem wants to give, you know, it's a concept of chesed. That means that in every person there's a need to give and a drive to give. And a drive to love, you know, it's not just something, you know, some internalized form. It's much more basic, a need to be just. This is the basis of the soul. It's intrinsic to every human being. It's what makes a person human. And as a result, you know, I always bring down the Gemara from Rabbi Akiva, that Rabbi Akiva, when he was, you know, in jail, Shimon Bar Yochai threatened him. So when Shimon Bar Yochai threatened him, he said, you have to teach me Torah. If you don't teach me Torah, I'm going to get my father Yochai to get the Romans to torture you, you know. Because he was so upset because Rabbi Akiva refused to teach him Torah, so he threatened him. So Rabbi Akiva looked at him and he said, you know, he realized the student had lost it, and he said, my son, he says, more than the calf needs to drink milk, yeah, the calf needs to give. Yeah, what can I do? I'm not going to teach you, though. He says, who's in greater pain? The person in life who wants to take and can't get what he wants, or a person, you know, who can't give, who's in greater pain? So he said, the person who can't give is in much greater pain than the person who can't get what he wants. Now, go and ask somebody in the street if they're aware of the pain of not being able to give in this way. How many people would define it? go and ask, as I said to you, all of the illnesses that come because of people who are unable to give in their Lord. Many, many psychological illnesses come because people are in a situation where they're not able to give. Because there's a deep need and a desire to give that's intrinsic to the human being. Chesed is the basis. Shem's midot is the basis of the human soul, you know. And so you understand, the concept of the Yetzer Tov isn't simple. It means that there are intrinsic midot of Tov inside a human being. That's our Amunah. It's not true that there's only physicality inside a human being and no spiritual derives. The soul means, I believe in the soul, means that there's a Yetzer Tov, basic spiritual resources, the need to be good, the need to be just, and to do true, that come from the soul and are strong, powerful energies inside the life of the person. And if you don't know that, then you're never going to be able to beat the Yetzer Hara. Because working on the Yetzer Hara means that you're able to define what this Tov is and bring it out. That's the main way that you're able to fight the Yetzer Hara, is by developing Tov. Getting in touch with the Tov that you have within you and developing it, that's the first weapon against the Yetzer Hara. And you don't have to focus on the Ra itself, you focus on the Tov. I have my marshal on this. I have my marshal. It's good anyway, everybody's probably tired now. You're waiting on the thing. It's like, you know, when I teach, I always give too much chomer when I teach. You know what I mean? Like, when I teach girls, for example, most people can't concentrate more than 40 minutes. And in that 40 minutes, you really can't give more than maybe 10 or 15 minutes of material. The rest of the time, you have to stop, you have to give stories. If you give too much, people short circuit and they just shut off. You realize that when you teach, you have to start gauging, like, what are people's ability? How much homework can people take? You know what I'm saying? So when you teach, you see you're active, so you're able to give more than people can take. But when you teach, when you're listening, you're passive. And a passive, it's much harder to listen than it is to talk. You know what I mean? When you're talking, you're in a state of,
Unless you bring the Zohar.
Yeah, unless you bring the Zohar. Then you bring the Zohar. If everybody's out to lunch, then you bring out the Zohar.
That's the last chance to live.
If nobody's there at all, so then, you wing it there, yeah. But anyway, so I have my marshal for this. I'm trying to teach you guys as well how to learn the Gardeners and how to teach, because you're all going to be teachers one day.
Of course.
Teach this material. So they write. Every person has to be a mashpia. So when mashpia is like this, a person goes into a room, it's dark, it's pitch black, he can't see. So he walks in, and then he bangs his thigh, corner table over here. And he trips over the leg of the post, falls flat on his face. As he falls flat on the face, he hits the stender, and the stender falls down on top of him. He's in the dark. And he says, he feels like he's in a room full of raw monsters out to get him, And the person is, there must be some force of evil behind all these things are going to. And, he's just getting destroyed here. Some sadist design this place, torture chamber. So what does he do? He decides that he has to protect himself. So he puts a tremendous amount of energy into mapping out the room, fighting a war against the thing over here, and finding a place that's safe in China. And he spends, a lot of time finally trying to work it out until he feels like he's winning his battles, And somebody comes to him and says, how long have you been in this room, 6 months, I made it, I think I'm winning. And he says, don't be an idiot. He says, let me help you out. He takes it and lights a match. All of a sudden, he can see, and then he realizes that it's just a chair that he tripped over a wall, keeps up the ceiling, the standards to learn on, and all these things, the spoiling of monsters and all, brought for seven. He just lit a match, one little match, whole room of darkness, and all the monsters vanished. And here's this guy spending so much time in the dark, groping, trying to find him. So that's my mashal for how we fight our personal battles in life. You have the Yetzer Hara monsters out there, and you fight this way and that way, and they're trying to get you in anger, and hit your wife, and speak less in the heart, and then you're out of control. What are you spending all your time focusing on the dark for? Light a light, develop one bit of your soul, you know, one bit of Tov that's there, and they all these things are going to go away. You have to spend so much time fighting Ra by focusing in on the Ra. One bit of Tov, you can develop it. It'll disappear. Light up one bit of Yetzer Tov, focus on Tov that's there, develop it. The Ra is gone. And that's how you fight the battles. Rav Yochanan, I found yesterday, I'd say after Shema yesterday, because I was looking at this Gemara, and I got to a place to have a mincha, and I had 5 minutes before mincha, and there was a sefer on the side of my Marma Rav Yochanan. So I picked up the sefer and I opened it up, and it was right on this Gemara, and I was thinking,
wow.
And in a Marma, and it's like, what was really said in this Marma? Yeah, and it said, yeah, this Pshat in this Gemara, stir up the Yetzer Tov against the Yetzer Ra. He says, all of the battles from the Yetzer Tov. Person can't begin to fight, you have to begin to develop in Tov. You know, you have to be above your poshim, right? Find the Tov inside of you. Don't focus on your desire to say slander. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. Bang yourself on Kenya. A person who cares what other people, the Chalali wants to be Lashon Hara about it. Do chesed, you know. And by that, bring out your care of other people. You won't have the problem about the thing Lashon Hara. Just go away. Light up a little bit of the light of the soul. Uplifts. Not only that, but the Rebbe goes further and writes, I remember about this, he says even further, he says that he has a research, it's a famous Rebbe, people in Revolv always talk to about it, that's why it's famous. And a lot of Talmidim in Revolv. But he says that he has a Masara that every person, he writes in this Maimer that a person who's who doesn't know he has the Yetzer Hara, so he's going to fall in this world. But a person who doesn't know he has the Yetzer Tov, how is he ever going to develop spiritually? It's the Yetzer Tov that enables us to develop. Everything is there. And so he says he has a tradition that every person has one good midah that's far, that he has naturally from birth, far better than any of the other midot that he has inside. And all of the person's spiritual development is going to come from developing that midah. So he writes. Yeah, that's how you do it. And once you develop that nida, it'll lift up all parts of the personality. So, and that's the derech, the five yetzer. You have to find, focus in, see what that nida is, develop it. And by doing so, many of your problems with the yetzer will go away. Come on. You do it anyway with the yetzer. Now, the question is, of course, how do you find that nida? I haven't answered that also. What are you saying? What can you answer?
I don't know.
How do you find that? So my answer is like this, that whatever, you know, everybody has talents, and whatever you enjoy in Ruchnius, that's talents. That's as simple. Find something that, do what you like. If you find something that you like, somebody, there's some things that we just enjoy naturally. Some people love to doubt. I met a guy, I asked him how he became religious. So he said he was walking in Sfat one day. It was freezing cold, and he'd never been in a shul in his life. And some guy shouted out to him as he passed, "Why are you coming and keep warm? I just put on the oven." And he went in. It was Friday afternoon. Lo and behold, people came in and davened, Shabbos davening. For the first time in his life, he saw tefillah. And it wasn't like a Kaulbach meeting, you know. It was like a religious meeting. He says that made such an impact on him. He decided he had to become religious. That guy has a talent in tefillah, something unique. His whole life he's going to develop the tefillah this person. Because a lot of people will hate tefillah and would never think of it. Something unique, that something speaks to you. It's a sign that you have a gift in it. It's a klal in life. Any part of the Torah that speaks to you, any midah Torah that speaks to you, you get excited about it, you feel yourself come along. It's a sign you have a unique talent in it. That's what you have to be developed. He says, a person in life, avada, you have to stop doing averas, but the main development comes from developing what you're good at. So I said, finding what you have talent in, and developing. We all have talents in different areas. So he says, and if you're able to find that talent and develop it, so then that's the first and best weapon against the Yetzer Hara. Weapon that is. That's when you begin to uplift yourself. And once you begin lifting yourself, so then lot of problems and monsters and fragments just go away. That's Migzu, you know. Stir up your Yetzer Tov, you know. Against your Yetzer on the Olam, continually work on it, developing that Tov, bringing it out, finding it. You know. And you don't have to focus on that, right? That's the first rhythm. Like, you don't want to go away. So he writes. Now, we're going to see. We'll have to stop over here already. It's getting late. But he writes that, you know, the war is going to go on. You know, what happens if it doesn't work? You know, we're going to go through a lot of different options over here. You know, which is, we'll see, is going to be important in life. But you have to begin to try. And the battle with the ATR, yeah, you have to begin to try various strategies. Left Africa, every strategy works for every person. Sometimes the strategies which you might don't work even though they're good ideas. But at least you started the battle. The main thing is you started the battle and you start looking. The first way, at least when you begin, is to try to stir up your Yetzer Tov. That's the great weapon that we have in our fight for the Yetzer Tov. It doesn't work, so next time we'll go through the other three weapons in our arsenal. Okay.
Thank you.
We made it.